From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 239, recorded live Thursday, November 5th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Rob Connery about their new podcast called This Developer's Life.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. It's a crazy crossover edition of Hansel Minutes this week because I've got Rob Connery on the show. Rob, the host of This Developer's Life, another podcast that he and I work on. How's it going, Rob?
It's going really well. How are you?
I'm very well. I hear some things in the background there. What's going on over at the Connery residence?
Yeah, I should warn you, we have some rodents of unusual size fixing up my house. A little construction work going on, and I could not reschedule it, so hopefully it's not going to be too loud.
So this will be a very good episode to explain to people how to do a podcast. You get as many construction workers as possible, maybe a saw, an air compressor.
Yep. Secret to my success, right?
Yes,
there.
Yes. High quality audio. Yep. So what's involved? I know how we make podcasts over here because Pwop Productions and Carl Franklin and Lawrence Ryan and all the folks at Pwop work on Hansel Minutes. How do you do the show? I mean, I kind of know, but let's pretend I don't know, because it's interesting, not just the technical stuff, but the inspiration and, you know, how does that work? What's the production like?
Well, you know, the original inspiration for the show was, of course, This American Life, one of my favorite podcasts. But, you know, as I just thought, you know, hey, I could do something like this for the development arena. It started to hit me that, you know, This American Life borrows a lot from, you know, cinematic production aesthetics.
And remember that a lot of our listeners aren't American. So as a way of context, This American Life is part of Public Radio and Public Radio International, which is a kind of a national nonprofit, you know, government-run radio. And This American Life comes out of WBEZ Chicago. And it is they've done about 400 shows now. It's largely considered to be, you know, well, it is technically the number one podcast on iTunes consistently. It is an extremely popular radio show. They have live shows where they'll come and have people tell stories on stage, so you can go and see the radio show recorded live. And the general idea is that this gentleman named Ira Glass tells stories, and it's usually broken up into acts, and those acts are based on themes. So you'll have a theme like going to summer camp, and what's uniquely American about going to summer camp. You know, in this week's episode, three stories about summer camp, yada, yada, yada. So it's very cinematic. It's very structured. It's very formal. And they've honed it over the last several years to a fine, it's a machine. It's a very emotional, intense show. And I think we both recommend it to anybody. So absolutely, for those of you who aren't in America, This American Life, while uniquely American, is certainly appropriate for folks, who live elsewhere.
I think so. And, you know, I thought it was also incredibly appropriate for what we do in that, you know, one of the fun things when you get together with other geeks, like when you have your nerd dinner or at conferences, you know, you sit down and you share stories. It's just part of the human condition. And I kind of figured that there's so many podcasts out there that talk about things. And a lot of people, you know, tend to get, I don't want to say snarky, but as Miguel said in our last podcast, we're perfectly tuned complaining machines because we see so many details and things. And I thought, you know, we need a bit of inspiration, you know, and some positivity out there. That's sort of been my goal. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how I make it, it's sort of interesting when you look at a podcast, not as audio, but more as cinema. And, because it's storytelling, and which is a true audio form. But if you convert that into a cinematic form, and you start interspersing music in there, there all of a sudden becomes a pace and a meter. And next thing you know, you have to clip and edit down to the most minute detail to get actually the pace and tone of the speaker or the storyteller to match the musical tone, to match an overall pace inside of the podcast. It's pretty intense work, I have to say.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about what we're trying to do on Hansel Minutes is to educate So our editing, our story arc, our intent, our, you know, everything is tuned to give you a little bit of information that hopefully you didn't have before, which is an extremely different way of going about things than this developer's life. You're trying to have an emotional effect on someone and not inform, but rather kind of enlighten.
Yeah, absolutely. In a way, so if you know, if you're a fan of like The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, right? That's much more of a live interactive experience. Whereas, you know, you could flip the channel and then you're watching, 2001 Space Odyssey and it's a different vehicle, much more produced, much more honed, but it's a different way of telling stories. I mean, both of them get into the art of storytelling. It's just a different vehicle is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you and I have been at conferences over the last 5 or 6 years, and we've been in these amazing conversations. They might be in a restaurant in Vegas while we're at a conference in the middle of the night, and we go, gosh, I wish we had a recorder. I mean, I can tell you, you were there, how many times we've had that experience where we've been somewhere in this amazing conversation where someone is telling an amazing story and we just wished we had a recorder.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I kind of feel like that's what you're trying to do with the show.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And same thing. I have a bunch of friends here that are technically inclined, and we're sitting at lunch, and one of them will just tell me the most incredible story about this thing at Sun. And I just sit there like absolutely enraptured and just thinking, what, you know? And I actually went out and bought a Tascam, MP3 recorder. I keep it with me. I'm a complete dork. I keep it with me just in case from now on.
I should do that too. I mean, there's been a number of times when I've been out and about, and it kind of messes up the spontaneity. I mean, it's one of those things where you sacrifice audio quality for spontaneity. I've had times when I wanted to bust out the recorder, except I've got a little M audio micro track and two microphones, and, you know, it takes 5 minutes to set up. So you have a handheld one now that you can use if in case something spontaneous happens?
Mm-hmm. I do. It fits right in my pocket. I got it on Amazon. It's great.
I've seen people try to make podcasts using only like an iPhone or a mobile phone recorder. And I tend to recommend against that because the microphone is usually pretty low quality. And it almost always uses that audio compressed. Do you have a thought either way?
Absolutely. It takes a while to master the audio aspect, as a lot of people will probably attest to that have listened to the first few episodes of This Developer's Life. And, you know, if you get into the audio production part of it and you start listening to higher end audio, you can't go backwards. So if you start out with an iPhone and just record a conversation, it might sound okay to your ears. But then let's say you step up to an MP3 recorder that costs maybe $50 at Best Buy, and then you listen to that. And you say, oh my God, this just sounds so much better. And then you keep going. The thing that you're actually picking up is the texture of the person's voice. And there's so much to it. So for instance, talking to you now, I'm using a pretty nice microphone, and I'm about 3 or 4 inches from the pickup here. But you know, you can work that to make it sound like a much more intimate experience. As you know, you're an audio person. And so when you start mastering those things, it all of a sudden opens up so much more in terms of getting through to people and telling a story.
Well, I'm certainly not as much an audio person as Carl and Lawrence and the folks at Prop, because just when I think I get it, I learn that I don't get it at all. But for example, I'm using an older M-Audio micro track. I've got a Shure microphone and a pair of XLR to 1/4 inch cables. And I'm using an audio trap, T-R-A-P, trap from a company called Real Traps. This is kind of like a portable vocal booth to try to make the sound quality a little bit better. I think I'm probably looking at about $500 worth of equipment. But is that required for someone to start a podcast? I mean, couldn't someone out there who has a great story just record into their podcast, or just fire up Skype and record the audio there?
You know, it's an interesting question. I read a great article by Dan Benjamin from 5x5 Studios, who does the Dev Show and about 100 other podcasts. But if you go to hivelogic.com, which is his blog, and you search for podcast, he has got a getting started guide where he talks about the investment that you'll make. And you can get off the ground for $50. you know, just get a reasonable microphone and sit in a quiet place. But then as more and more people listen to it, more and more people are going to pick on you. And as it becomes more and more popular, you're going to be compared to, you know, like Hansel Minutes, right? Where the audio is spotless. And people are going to say, well, you know, when I listen to Scott, he sounds great. And you sound like, you know, you're screaming into a manhole.
No one has said that.
Well, okay.
So they've thought it though.
Right. Of course. So, you know, you can get off the ground easy, but I will say it's like owning an aquarium or anything else really. You quickly go down the slide of how do I sound better? How do I make this faster?
It's definitely humbling. Like I usually use the analogy about, you know, once you think you're a good fake plastic rock player, if you're doing like Rock Band on an Xbox and you're on easy, and then you see someone do it on expert, and then you think they're amazing, and then you see someone actually play the guitar, you know, like Sean Wildermuth or Carl Franklin, and you realize, wow, we're not even playing the same thing. Like, I'm playing fake plastic rock. That's why, I mean, you can make, you know, Dan Benjamin's an example, Carl Franklin's example. I mean, he has an entire company dedicated to high quality podcasting. So while I appreciate that, you know, people like the quality of this show and that show and the other show, you can always be an expert, and you can always, and then even then you might discover that you're not playing in the same leagues. But don't you think those are incremental improvements? I mean, once you get to 80%, 85% good, you'll spend the rest of your life trying to get that last 15% solid.
Absolutely. And it's an obsessive thing for sure. And, you know, it mirrors a lot of other things you do in life, even coding. You know, you can learn a language to about 80%, become functional and, you know, really good. But it's that last 20%, whatever, that becomes mastery and guru time, where you can answer just about any question at a conference. Well, someone at your level, you know what I mean? But so to get back a little bit to what you can do to get started, like for right now, I'm actually recording in GarageBand. I do all the production in GarageBand, but a lot of professional podcasters would poo-poo that. You know, they'd say, oh, go get some of the Sony tools, or go get ProLogic and all these other things. Because you can tune and fine tune the music and everything you do to such a high degree. But for me, you know, this does everything I need. You can affect some background effects. You can tweak the vocals a little bit. You can actually make your voice sound like a female if you want to. I was going to do that to you one of the podcasts, but I didn't.
I think my voice does a decent enough job of sounding like a female. Yeah. I don't need so any help. But
GarageBand comes free with the new Macs. Also, Audacity is a free program you can go grab, and there's a ton of things you can do in there. And there's lots of blog posts online about how to get started.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself. Get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/TelerIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
How much work should you put into it? And I thought about this recently because I kind of woke up one day and said, wow, I'm participating in 2 podcasts. This is taking away from coding time. And you must have thought the same thought, right? I mean, you've got TechPub, your, you know, video education site. You've got work that you do on the side as a consultant and a, you know, gun for hire. And you've got this Developer's Life that you're doing editing and production with me on. Every hour that you're spending editing your podcast is an hour you're not learning Ruby or playing with C# or whatever. Do you balance that and say, well, it's good enough, or do you get obsessive and then realize that you'll burn an entire day on some sound problem? I mean, I guess what I'm trying to understand is, as a programmer type personality, Do you consider this creative outlet being different? And if so, is it taking time away from your more analytical life?
I've thought about that a lot. And I think the one answer that I can give you is that I don't think of it as it's not necessarily a debit, let's call it that. It actually, the hours that I spend on the podcast multiply the time I'm able to work on code, for instance. It's a creative outlet. It's something that I actually need to do, and I look forward to it to the point where, when I know a show is coming and we have the interviews down, I can't stop thinking about it. And then in the evenings, I'll sit down and start splicing it, and I get so excited and so motivated listening to the stories and putting it together that the next day, when I'm working, I just feel happy. And I don't know. So I guess it depends on your motivation. If you're going to start a podcast and your question was, how much time should you put into it? For me, it's a creative outlet, and I never feel like I have to do it. I just want to, and I let it come, and out it goes. And then I'm motivated to do my regular job, I guess is the best way to put it. And I feel refreshed. I don't know. I don't know if that's coming out in a cohesive answer.
No, I think so. I think that then the question for people who are listening, though, is what if no one listened to the show? Because sometimes, yeah. I'm just doing my thing, right? I'm just turning the crank, and I do a show every week, and I enjoy it, and it's part of my life now. We've done 4 years worth of shows. And I tell people, it doesn't really matter if anyone listens, If I have five really awesome listeners or 50,000, I honestly couldn't tell you exactly how many people listen to the show. And when I tell that to people, they always think that it's some kind of false modesty. And I'm sure you must have the same thing. Oh, well, you're Rob Connery. You've got a popular blah, 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 blah. For every person that's doing okay, there's someone else who's doing way better. You and I have a nice little thing going here, and we've got a nice following. And then you've got, Dan Benjamin, who's got more than that. And then Leo Laporte, who's got more than that. And Adam Curry has got more than that, right? Not everybody can be Beyonce. But would you do it even if no one was listening?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I try and explain this to people. We get a lot of feedback.
We do.
Yeah. And a lot of people say, one person said to me, I love the podcast. I love the interviews. I hate the music. If you take the music out, I won't listen to it, or I'll listen to it. And I actually joyfully respond, I'm so sorry that I'm going to lose you as a listener, but honestly, take this the right way. I don't care. Because this is, I can no more control this creative thing than I think anyone can control, any creative effort, really. And no, I don't care if anybody listens. It's just an expression. It's a thing I do. And for once in my kind of professional existence, I have complete 100% control over a thing, where it's not necessarily due to a client. It's something, I create. So normally when we write code, we write it for a business or a thing or to make money or whatever. I don't have any commitments here. I just create it, and I want it to be. And because there's none of the pressure of it has expectations on it, I feel like, I have to make it to be what it is, and there is no other way to do it.
So how do you, asking questions that the audience might have, how do you reconcile that with me? You have 100% over your 50%.
Ah, right. That's a good question.
We didn't think anything of it, right? When we thought about joining up in episode two, we was like, oh yeah, we'd both been talking about doing a show like this, and it's a perfect outlet for each of us. And I didn't get any sense at all that when I joined, early on that we haven't had any fights or anything.
No, not at all. And I think, when you talk to somebody and they share your vision to a point that, you stair-step each other rather than clash, it only makes the effort better. And for me, it's like the show couldn't be without you. Because as people can probably tell in this podcast here, you have a much better way of narrating, and I'm getting there. I'm not a natural speaker. And I tend to ramble, as you know as well. And so I don't sound like I ramble in the podcast
we'll spend time at we'll be up at like 2 a.m. going over the show And yeah. I'm like, okay, Rob, so you said about 3 minutes worth of information, but you told about 15 minutes to do it. And you're like, really? Oh, you know, but yeah, this is the thing, right? And then I'm not the music guy. And I will, well, you know, so this is why there's two of us.
You know, it's funny. Yeah. I joked online that, you know, I'm Will I Am and you're Fergie, but in a sense, there's truth to that, and that I can compose the story. I can edit the arc down. I can do all these things, but I cannot necessarily narrate as good as you can. And also the interviews as well is just stellar. So anyway, it's a perfect fit to get back.
Well, yeah.
To
and point. There's administrative stuff and running the site and messing around with the audio and uploading mm-hmm. crap and finding hosters and finding, you know, this is the thing, right? It's 50-50. We split it, but
absolutely.
Why not keep a creative outlet to yourself? Why not just make it just you and you do it all by yourself in kind of your cave?
Well, it's just more fun to share, you know, especially when we always tell our kids that, right? You share your candy with someone else, they'll give some more candy back to you. And all of a sudden you have, you know, a really fun time with somebody and you're creating this shared experience. And, you know, it's fun to create, it's fun to make art, it's fun to do any sort of effort, but when you share it with somebody and you feel their joy, it resonates. And I feel that the show is way better because our two creative efforts are coming. And, you know, when
it's
I said before,
it's pair programming for audio. You are more than twice as productive.
Absolutely. And when I said before, it's my creative outlet. I mean, it doesn't change just because, you know, you're here.
It's so funny though, that when you talk about the excitement, I came out of the Miguel interview, and if you haven't listened to the show, I'd encourage you to check it out. The most recent one, I think, was episode 7, and we had Alex Payne, we had John Rasig, and we had our mutual friend, Miguel de Acasa. And I came out of the interview with Miguel, and I was just like, and I called you right away. I was like, yeah. On campus, I was like, oh my goodness, it was so awesome.
Yeah, you made my day.
I'm such a fanboy. But, you know, it was just a great interview. It's just one of those things where we were both in good moods and we both had been well fed and it was sunny outside and, you know, everything good. So then we call each other like little girls. And it's like Justin Bieber excitement about about how well things went. You know what I mean? Same thing happened with the Ward Cunningham interview. You remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I listened to those things. Well, you know, when you called me, it was funny. You called me and I sat down and, you know, you dropped the audio on Dropbox and I sat down and listened to it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is stellar. And, you know, the original cut was about 35 minutes, if I remember right. Mm. And I was just thinking, this is all absolutely usable material, but I have to edit it down to meet, you know, the overall story theme. And I was just tearing myself to pieces. Like, do I really need to edit this? And, we'll reuse some of it later on. But that was just brilliant. That interview was just wonderful.
But that's a really interesting point that you bring up, though, right? I mean, someone goes out into the woods and they find this amazing, you know, piece of wood or an old log, and they go back and the log is beautiful, but somehow they feel the need to take away. They want to whittle it. And they're questioning themselves the whole time. You know, this is a beautiful piece of nature. It sits on itself, but then it gets whittled into something more. That is kind of a good example. I mean, we'll go and we'll talk to someone for an hour and a half, and you'll eke 15 minutes out of it, but it does become more than the raw.
It does. And it's weird because I've thought of that, especially with this last episode when I put in the mashups, mm-hmm. because I was sitting there thinking, you know, why do I want to do this? This is just not really the caliber of music I've put in before. And not only that, but, you know, people, as I mentioned, have said to us, too much music. And here I am putting in more. And I thought, I don't know why. And the more I question why I'm doing something, the harder it is for me to create it. So I just turned off the voice. And so then what I do is I lay down the music tracks and then I'll go looking for parts of Miguel's story and I'll tack them together. And I'll kind of, you know, things out, but there's a voice inside my head that tells me what needs to be conveyed. And then, you know, that's what comes down. And then next thing I know, I've got, you know, 15, 20 minutes of Miguel talking and it's done.
Mm-hmm. One of the criticisms that people have given us is that maybe the show is more than an homage. An homage? Is it an homage? I always think about it. It's so funny. Taking a small tangent. You know how people have those verbal affectations, right? Like there's a guy at work. There's a guy at work. He's a great guy. I love everything he says. I talk to him, you know, all the time. And then every once in a while, he'll say organization.
Oh, dear.
And it's like a slap in the face.
Yeah.
And then I wonder, what's mine?
Ugh. Yeah.
Maybe it's an homage.
But I have a bunch. I put syllables. I emphasize the wrong thing in the syllable. Like, you know, Eugene, right? And he's like,
oh,
no,
yeah, there's a town in Oregon Eugene. Called Eugene, Oregon, where your brother lives, and you always call it Eugene.
Eugene. And my wife jumps at me because I'll say insurance. She's like, no, it's insurance.
Insurance.
And I don't know where that came from.
You know, that's funny. I got in trouble once with my wife for saying, I think it was either internship or internship. To this day, I'm not even quite sure how to pronounce nuclear. Nuclear?
Yeah, nuclear.
You know, I don't know anymore.
If you're from Texas, it's nuclear.
It's
for the
awful.
Rest of the world, it's nuclear. I know.
So anyway, we've been accused of the show being more than just an homage to this American Life, but a complete ripoff.
Yeah.
And I think my answer would be that this American Life is an intense and pervasive inspiration for the show. But I am confident that our show has and will continue to find its own voice. What do you think?
Certainly, but you have to go farther back than just this American Life. Like, mm-hmm. if you watch 48 Hours or 2020 or any one of those news programs, you know, you will see the same exact mechanism at work. Someone narrating a story. Is it narrating or narrating? Someone narrating
it's
a story.
Narrating, I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. And then music overlaid, and all of a sudden, dramatic pause. It's a really old style, tried and true way of telling a story. So at the same time, yeah, we do need to find our own voice. I feel like with the last two or three, it's just come a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I think you don't know what you're doing the first few.
5, 6, and 7. I mean, the first one, I love all the shows, but 5, 6, and 7 are really starting to become coming into our place, I think, and which makes me happy because it is always going to seem like This American Life if you are used to multi-act, 1 hour long podcasts with music and dramatic pauses. But like you said, you know, Law and Order is the same thing. I mean, TV mm-hmm. shows.
Yeah, it's just a cinematic way of telling a story.
Someone said you sounded like Captain Kirk.
I know.
On my blog.
You know, man.
Isn't it awful? Geez. The criticism is awful, but you say that you don't mind, Rob, but you do mind. You do feel it.
It's funny because we talk about affectations. It's one of the things that, you know, I remember going to speaker training at Microsoft. They're like, you know, realize what you do over and over again as a crutch when you're speaking. And for me, I speak too fast. And as you can hear on this podcast, so when I'm narrating, what I tend to do is slow my voice down. But when I slow my voice down, I tend to sound dramatic. And people are like, don't you think you're squeezing that a little much?
it's part of who you are, though. It's funny.
I suppose,
although,
I guess.
Pretty soon, I think we'll start hearing people make fun of you. Like we'll hear, like, because you always try to make fun of me in any opportunity that you have.
I should
open up the next episode of This Developer's Life. I'm Rob Connery, and I am to talk to you about programming today. It's fantastic.
That's Scott Hanselman. Now, Scott likes... No, see, I can't do you.
All you have to do me is you say so, now, or like anything, and then add a comma, which is like, that's right, and now I'm taking the conversation this direction. Or really, okay, so I'm going to take the conversation this direction. That's how you make fun of me.
Know
your affectations. It's true, though. Know your affectations. And I would also encourage people to know how to pronounce words.
Oh, my gosh. I was listening to, I can't remember where it was, but the person narrating it kept saying similarly. No, it stopped me.
Similarly?
It stopped me in my track. I lost all... I couldn't follow along anymore.
I was listening to another very, very famous podcaster on the radio who said, they didn't say human. It was like human, like the human condition.
Yes.
That's not okay.
Yeah. It's amazing what comes out. Like, I remember, I was going to talk about somebody, but I probably shouldn't.
I think the point is, though, that everyone has those words that you can go 30, 40 years of your life and never really know. I was on Channel 9 once with Dan Fernandez, and I said, trough, T-H-R-O-G-H. It's trough, like a trough, right, like the nadir of a curve. And yeah, somewhere in my brain for the last 30 years, I've thought that it was pronounced trough. And I just never, like, corrected that bite. There's no CRC in my brain to correct that. So Dan was like, what are you saying? What is wrong with you? I think
that's
that
embarrassing.
People are going to have those mistakes, and that's okay on, yeah, your show, and you shouldn't sweat it.
Yep. Well, you know, you try not to, but like even today on Twitter, someone, you know, asked me, shouldn't it be this developer life instead of the possessive this developers? And I thought, well, that's an interesting take. And so we went back and forth. The next thing you know, we're talking about nouns and adjectives and verbs and, you know, old style naming. And it's just funny. I mean, you know, and it wasn't an argument by any stretch, but, you know, as developers, we like to be exact. And it didn't make sense to him why we'd have the possessive in the name. And I thought, well, I guess I really don't have much of a reason. It just seemed to flow, you know?
Well, I mean, whether you name it this developer life or this developer's life, the point is we're going to keep moving forward. We're going to try to explore stories from everybody. I think that we've had a couple of famous people on, maybe just because mm-hmm. we know some of them and they were conveniently located. I think that we should have more not famous people on. I think that in the future we'll have some spontaneous interviews, like when you have lunch with someone and pull out your microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is one of my goals to have many more common stories, much more relatable stories. Because while interviewing Resig and DHH is fun, I think to a lot of people it's hard to relate to them.
Right.
Yet their stories were so inspirational. I just felt like they had to be out there.
I think that we do appreciate, I mean, I don't know about you, but I do appreciate the story ideas. I mean, we've got at least 5 good story ideas, maybe 10. Mm. Someone had an idea called Solitude about mm-hmm. the lone programmer, people doing big stuff all by themselves. I mean, I think you would agree, if someone has a great idea for a story, tell us on Twitter, and we are keeping track.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thanks, Rob, for chatting with me today.
Yeah, absolutely. And next time, you get to play me in the next episode.
I would love to play Rob Connery on a podcast. It would be fantastic.
All right, then.
All right. Well, check out our show. It's at www.thisdeveloperslife.com. And thank you so much for listening to yet another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.